thought that jeans were okay. She promised to call me and I am her sponsor. She promised to text me and I am her friend. She promised to meet me right here for coffee.
Tell her this won't be the end.
I found out her dog died and oh how she loved him.
I found out her mom called, you know what that means.
I found out her work is doing a reorg.
She's coming apart at the seams.
Yay!
Oh yay, she's got to a meeting. Oh yay, she's down on her knees. Oh yay, she called me for coffee. It's never as bad as it seems.
That thing though. So I don't. Hello and welcome to the 2016 Region 1 Convention of Overeaters Anonymous. My name is Gary and I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm from Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. If you are a member of the press or a non-member of OA, please remember that we are a 12-step program and respect our tradition of anonymity. Who you see here, what you see here, when you leave here, let it stay here. As a reminder, this session is being recorded, and a podcast of this session will be available on the Region 1 website over the next few months. There will be an opportunity for open sharing and questions after the presentation. Your voice may or may not be picked up by the recorder, but the speaker will repeat your question before providing their comment. If you are looking for a sponsor, those available to sponsor will have a gold star on their name tag. Look for someone who has what you want and ask how he or she is achieving it. Could we please begin this meeting with a moment of silence to remember why we are here and to remember those who still suffer? Thank you. This is the seminar on sponsorship, and Alana is going to be our presenter. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Alana. I'm a grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater.
Hi, Alana.
To qualify, I've been in OA since August 19th, 2007, and I've been abstinent since October 2nd, 2007. So I'm coming up on nine years, and I don't weigh myself. I let my doctor weigh me, but I've released between 35 and 45 pounds from my top weight. So why did I want to talk on sponsorship? It's probably my favorite tool. It's up there with meetings for me, and it's the tool that I use on a daily basis. I wouldn't be abstinent if it wasn't for sponsorship. My lowest low was after I had been in program about a month, and I wasn't working the steps with a sponsor at this time. I went away, and I've talked to a couple people over the course of the week, and they've heard this part of my story, but I went away on a class trip, and I was trying the no sugar thing, because I had heard people in OA meetings talk about not eating sugar, so I'm like, okay, I'll try that on. And I found a store, I was in San Antonio on a class trip, and I found a store that sold sugar-free chocolate. And I bought a pound and a half, and I ate it all. And I went back the next day, and I bought a pound and a half, and I ate it all. And there was a moment where I was in the hotel room, binging, shoveling, and a friend walked in and caught me, and I got rid of the evidence, and I stopped mid-chew, and it was like demoralization. Let's just go with that. Demoralization. Totally demoralized. And I was on the phone with my mom crying, like, what? Why can't I stop? And she's like, crying, I don't know why you can't stop. I can't help you. I don't know what to do. So I came back from San Antonio and I binged one more time on dried fruit. And then I started working the steps with my sponsor and I got abstinent. Oh, what a miracle of release that was. I'm going to progress chronologically through my story through the context of sponsorship. So my first sponsor, how I chose her. She was sitting across from me at the very first meeting that I ever attended, and she opened up her mouth and out came my story. And I just really loved her energy. She was very gentle, and I just got what she was saying. Like, it was just, she was in my head, and I really, really loved her. And so I asked her to be my sponsor, and she said, "Oh, I'm full right now, but I could sponsor you temporarily." And what I heard her say was, "I don't like you. I'll sponsor you temporarily, but eventually I'll try to lose you." And she took me on as a temporary sponsee, and after a few months she said, "Yeah, one of my sponsees dropped me, so I can take you on full time." And I was like, "You like me. You really like me." So that was a really great experience, and she took recovery so seriously, and so did I. And I can't stress the importance of that I wasn't a dabbler. I jumped in with both feet when I came in, and I got a sponsor as soon as I could, and I started working the steps as soon as I could. I don't see the point of dabbling. I really don't. I understand that that's part of people's stories, but that for me, that I didn't really see the point of that. It's like, if I'm going to be here, I'm going to do the work. I don't want to just come to these meetings casually. Like, I don't want this to be a casual thing. I want this thing to work for me. So one of the things that I liked about her is that she would check in with me periodically and ask me, "So how do you feel like our sponsorship relationship is going?" And that is so key. I think communicating with a sponsor about how the sponsorship relationship is going is really, really critical. And there's two pieces of literature here that I wanted to cite, and I'm not going to be able to read you all the passages that I flagged, because as you can see, pretty much everything is flagged. This is a guide for sponsors. It's a pamphlet, and I must have read it before, but I just reread it in preparation for this talk, and all the answers for how to be a sponsor are in here. I don't know if I read this years ago. I'm sure I did, but I had to learn all the lessons that are in here. I had to learn them through trial and error, because that's just how you learn to be a sponsor, is by having a sponsor and by being one. It says that in here. I don't know what page, but it's in here. And I'm not going to cite the page numbers, because this is a really short pamphlet. Just read through it. The other thing I'm going to cite is the chapter Working with Others in the Big Book, which has, it's just like, every second line is just a gem about how to do it. And there's been so many problems that I've come up against in sponsorship, and the answers to them they're right here. They're also in our fellows, too, because our fellows are living and breathing sponsorship as well. So one of the questions about sponsorship is, when am I ready to become a sponsor? And there's different schools of thought about that. I've heard people in meetings talk about, well, as you sponsor up to the level of your recovery, and it talks about that in a guide for sponsors, too. So if I have done step one, I can sponsor somebody in step one. I've also heard people share in meetings about how, my sponsor says I'm done step five, now I'm ready to be a sponsor. For me, I was ready to be a sponsor when people started asking me to sponsor them. So I thought I was ready to be a sponsor long before I was, and I had done the 12 steps, I don't know, but I was like, I'm all ready to be a sponsor. Like, raise my hand when they say, are people available to sponsor? And nobody was asking me. So I'm like, well, what the hell? Like, I have all this recovery to share. Like, don't people see? Don't they want what I have? So I believe that I was ready to become a sponsor once people started asking me. And I think that that's a really good rule of thumb. Not that there's rules. But one of the things that it says in here is it kind of defines sponsorship. And I think that some people can get very bogged down. Well, what does it mean? What does it mean to be a sponsor? What do I have to do? And it's so clear in here. It's so simple. Can I find the page? Sponsoring means to share our experience, strength, and hope up to the level of our recovery. So that is so simple. I share my experience, strength, and hope all the time in meetings. I can do that with sponsees. And I don't need to make it more complicated than that. I don't need to... What sponsorship is not is I don't need to solve my sponsees' problems. And there's been times in recovery where it's like, I thought that I did, where it's just like, oh, they call me with the problem, and it's just like, figuring, wheels turning, and it's like, no. Like, that's not at all where the answers are. That's not the way that I was sponsored. I wasn't sponsored by people that tried to solve my problems. I was sponsored by people that encouraged me to listen to my own inner voice, my own inner voice of wisdom, which is my intuition. It talks about that in step two, about my intuition being God's direct line of communication into my heart. And that's the way that I sponsor too. So I got a phone call this week from a new person that I'm sponsoring, and she was kind of in a tizzy about a communication that she had gotten from somebody from her past. Like, she hadn't had contact with this person in 6 months. She said, what do I do? How do I respond to this? And I intuitively knew how to handle a situation that used to baffle me. I said, I could give you the words, or I could let you work this out with your higher power. I trust that you and your higher power are going to come to an understanding about this. And do you need to respond right this second? Or could you maybe sleep on it, leave it with God overnight? And then she was just like, oh, yeah, like, I can do that. So I really appreciate and sometimes hate when I take my problems to my sponsor, and she says to me, I trust that you and your higher power are going to find a solution for that. I'm just like, damn it. Like, I'm looking for the goods here. Like, tell me what I need to do. And inevitably, me and my higher power always find the right course of action. It just might take some time. So I think my impatience, I want an answer right now. Like, give it to me now. Like, I'm an addict. Like, I need immediate gratification. Give me the answers now. And it's like, no, God takes some time. So I love that my sponsor sponsors me that way. And she's never tried to, my current sponsor, I've been with her for over 4 years now, and she's never tried to take the reins from me. Like, she works her program so, so hard. And that is the best gift that she could possibly give to me, is by working her program hard. And so it is for me with sponsoring. The best way I could be a good sponsor is by working my own program really, really hard. Okay, so one of the things that it talks about in A Guide for Sponsors is establishing, I kind of want to read it to you, because it just phrases it really, 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 really well. Discuss any expectations you each may have and how to part if either chooses to do so. We have found it important to lay groundwork at the start. So that has definitely been something that I've learned by trial and error. Formerly, I used to take on sponsees, and we didn't have an upfront discussion about what my expectations were of them and what their expectations were of me, and it led to problems down the road. And so when it came time to, like, it's like, this isn't quite working, like, how do we kind of go our separate ways without hurting each other kind of thing? It was really, really awkward. So now, through trial and error, I've established expectations that I have of sponsees. And for some people, expectations is a dirty word. For me, it's not, because I think that expectations are reasonable if they're mutually agreed upon. So I need to communicate my expectations, and you need to agree to those. Not that you need to agree to them, but what I'm saying is that if we're going to work together, there needs to be a mutual understanding. So my expectations of my sponsees are quite simple. Maybe not easy, but they're simple. So they're go to at least 2 OA meetings a week, work the steps, contact me regularly, and follow a food plan. And be honest. And then, of course, you have the expectations of me as a sponsor as well. And it's like, let me know what your expectations are, and if I can meet them, then I'll let you know. If I can't, then I'll let you know that too. So it's really, for me, it's also been invaluable to do what my sponsor did with me and check in with my sponsees regularly and say, is this working for you? Like, how is this working for you? Is there enough contact? Not enough? Like, am I supporting you in the way that you need to be supported? And the way that I sponsor, I don't give a lot of direct instructions. Like, I'm not like a do this kind of sponsor. The way that I prefer to sponsor is lay the spiritual toolkit out for you to inspect, meaning telling you what it is that I do that works for me, and leaving you to decide whether or not you want to pick up those tools and use them. So I that's the way that I like to be sponsored as well. I don't want to be dictated to. I don't want to be told what to do, but I do want to see, well, how is it that you're working your program? How have you gotten where you have gotten? So that really works for me. And on that note, there's certain things that I'm not really, I maybe don't have any experience in, and that's okay. Like, I can acknowledge my limitations as a sponsor. So, I've been on both sides of that. So there was a time when I took something to a former sponsor. It was a dating issue, and she said, well, you know, I've been married for X number of years, and I don't really have any current experience in that. And it was like, wow, like, props to you for acknowledging your limitations. I can go and ask somebody else about that. Amazing. And recently, something happened like that with me. I had a sponsee who is working the program abstinent, following a food plan, but her weight is not coming off as fast as she wants it to. And I said, you know what? Like, that's not my experience. Like, when I came into program, I started following a food plan, I got abstinent, and the weight came off and then stabilized at a normal weight. But there's another person I know of in program who has had just your issue. And it's like, I can refer you to them. Of course, I asked their permission, and I left her to follow up. But it's amazing that I have the ability to do that. And it's just like, it's not just up to me. Like, it's up to the fellowship, and it's up to God. Like, it's not me that needs to solve that issue for them or to have all the answers. And there definitely have been times where I've been in conversation with sponsees and felt that anxiety rising in me, being like I have to have the right words, I have to have the right answer. But that's where I've really learned to welcome God into it, that it's not just me and my sponsee. God is overseeing that relationship. So also challenges in sponsorship relationships. I've had to let go of sponsors before. I've had to let go of sponsees before, and I've been let go by sponsees before. And what a guide for sponsors suggests is not to take it personally if you're ever let go on either end. And there's definitely, it talks a lot about there's tactful ways to end those relationships. It's easiest if you have established those ground rules up front. And if either person is in violation of that contract, sorry to use such strong language, but just for ease of use, I'm just going to use that terminology. Then you can have those conversations and be like, you know what, like either you're not living up to your end of the bargain, or I'm not living up to my end of the bargain. I thought that I was going to be able to commit to you, but I can't, kind of thing. It's so much easier to have those discussions later on in the relationship. But I just want to share with you guys about this one challenge that I had with my current sponsor. We were having difficulty connecting on the phone, and I thought that when she would leave me a voicemail, she would say, "Oh, looks like we didn't connect, but we'll connect when God wills it, or when the time is right." And when I heard her say that, what I actually heard her say was, "You're not important enough for me to schedule time for." And I took that so hard, even though that's not what she said, and I distanced myself. I started to pull away, and I started to build up a resentment. And we didn't talk about it. We didn't talk for months. And I would see her at meetings, and there would be like this like awkwardness, and I could feel the awkwardness on my end, and I could sense that she sensed my awkwardness. And I was preparing to speak at a marathon. This was about a year ago, preparing to speak at a marathon last October. And we have this tradition of me calling her before I go to speak, a speaking engagement. And on my drive to the speaking engagement, I'm like, I'm going to call her. I'm like, I feel compelled to call her. And we hadn't spoken in what felt like months. And I told her everything. I was honest about the way that I felt. And she said, "Thank you so much for telling me." And she's like, "I sensed that something was wrong." And she's like, "My gut reaction was to call you and be like, what's wrong and how can I fix it?" But instead, she was just like, "I'm going to leave this with God. I'm going to pray about it." So she was praying about it. I apparently was doing my work on it over here. And we cleared the air. And she said, "I love you. You are important to me." And my part in that was I wasn't valuing myself enough to ask for what I needed. And what I needed was for her to schedule time with me. It's like, holy crap, like how vulnerable I need to be in order to ask for what I need. So that was a huge, huge lesson. And so going forward, we've scheduled times to talk every week, and it's been fine. Like such a seemingly tiny little thing snowballed into me potentially dumping her as a sponsor. And where my mind went when we had that schism was, I don't need her. And that is such an old pattern for me, to say I don't need people when I so need people, especially people that love me unconditionally like she does. So our relationship is so much stronger because we were able to move through that discomfort, move through that awkwardness. And having a sponsor like that has taught me about staying when things get tough. And that's not my MO. And I want to be that for sponsees as well, to stay when things get tough. And sometimes that can't be the case, and sometimes that can. So I'm super grateful for my sponsees and the lessons that they teach me. I'm sponsoring three people right now, three people that call me on a regular basis, at least. And it's been such an incredible gift. I've never had daily contact with sponsees before. I haven't been working for the last year, and so that kind of found its way into my daily routine, is talking to sponsees on a daily basis. And my first thought when entering into that kind of relationship was, oh, this is going to be a drain on my meager resources. And it's just like, that is such old scarcity thinking, when it's just like, there's abundance. Like, the more time I give to my sponsees, the more abundance I have in my life. Like, it's such a mutual payback. So, and the love that I get from my sponsees is just like, oh, it just fills me up so, so much. And I was just listening to a step five on Thursday, and the genuine heartfelt thanks that I got from my sponsee just lit up it just lit everything up inside me. And it talks about that in working with others, which I haven't really quoted much, but oh God, just read this chapter. It's incredible. Read it over and over and over again. It says that working with others is the bright spot of our lives. And that has become true for me, that I don't experience greater joy than when I'm working with others, whether it's talking to newcomers, whether it's sponsoring people, seeing them progress, and also practicing the same, watching myself evolve as a person, practicing compassion. Like, I didn't see myself as a compassionate person, and now I'm listening to my sponsees' stuff and saying in my head to them, if not saying out loud, that's where you're at, and it's okay to be there. That's something that my first sponsor said to me a lot. She would say, well, that's where you're at. What does that say? Oh, thank you. She said, yeah, that's where you're at. That's just where you're at. And I'm just like, oh, stop saying that. But what she was saying was, it's okay to be exactly where you're at. You can't be where you're not. That's where you're at. And so in my mind, because I know how annoying it is to hear, in my mind I say that to my sponsees. That it's just like, and that's where you're at. It's okay to be there. Oh, I never knew that I had that kind of compassion and patience in my heart. I want to chat a little bit about letting go of sponsees. I've had to do that a couple times. One of the things that my first sponsor said when I came into a program was, this is a selfish program. Everything you do in this program is for your own recovery. And you don't hear that message very often in OA, but it was an important message for me to hear, that it's like, if I'm doing something and it's not helping my recovery, why am I doing it? Stop it. So there was a time when I was in a relationship with a couple times, actually, where I was in relationships with sponsees, and it was making my life more unmanageable, because there was a lot of chaos around even like connecting, and lots of excuses, and it was just like, I just can't deal with this anymore. And so having those conversations, like, there's one that in particular that I'm thinking of, having that conversation and letting her go and letting her know why. And questioning myself after it happened, being like, ooh, like, was that the right thing to do? And it says in working with others, I'm going to read this to you because it's just great, if I can find it. We find it a waste of time to keep chasing a person who cannot or will not work with you. If you leave with such a person alone, she may soon become convinced that she cannot recover by herself. To spend too much time on anyone's situation is to not deny some other alcoholic an opportunity to live and be happy. So that's very clear instruction for me. And that's what I practiced with this person. And you know how I know that that was the right decision? The next day, I went to a meeting and somebody said, I need a sponsor. Will you be my sponsor? So it was just like one door closed and another door opened. So I knew that was meant to be. So... And also, I have one of my closest friends in OA is a past sponsee of mine that I had to let go. So it's like, we can work through this stuff, and we can keep coming back, and we're just working through it together. If not in sponsor sponsee relationship, in some other kind of relationship. Like, not every sponsor sponsee relationship is going to work out, and that's totally fine. What else do I have to say? Oh, one thing I wanted to say is placing dependence. So it talks about this. It says this twice in Working with Others. We do not recover if we place dependence, if we depend on people rather than dependence on God. I'm not saying it perfectly, but that's okay. You get the gist. I really love that because I can't build up my program around any one person, and I have before. I've shifted into the realm of placing too much dependency in my sponsor, and with my very first sponsor, there was a time when I was dissatisfied with how much contact I was getting from her. Like, she wasn't returning my calls fast enough or something. And there's my expectation coming in, and I decided to drop her because of that. And I floundered around for a while, couldn't find anybody nowhere near as good as she was as a sponsor. And so after a few months, I put my tail between my legs, and I went back, and I said, "Would you be my sponsor again?" She's like, "Yeah, sure, no problem." So she was like totally fine with it and like totally like was not built. She didn't hold on to the resentment. It was all me. So I'm so, so grateful for that experience and just the humility that she had to take me back. And also that was a really great lesson in humility for me too. It's funny how expectations has been a theme for me throughout the course of all my relationships. Generally, when I'm in relationship and I'm having some kind of, thank you, some kind of issue, my expectations are in there somewhere. So, at the registration desk, I was asked, are you an available sponsor? And I was kind of like deer in the headlights, like, I want to be, but no, I can't. And what a gift it is to be able to say no, to acknowledge my limitations. And it talks about that in A Guide for Sponsors. Let me find it. Oh, here it is. Being a sponsor is a commitment. A sponsee relies on a sponsor, so don't say yes unless you mean it. Although sponsoring supports your recovery, be realistic on how many individuals you can help. It's like, oh, thank you. Thank you for answering that question. Like, I don't need to be superwoman, and I don't need to say yes to everything. I want to be there for my sponsees in the best way possible, and I don't think I want to be one of those sponsors that has a call at 8 o'clock, a call at 8:15, a call at 8:30, and a call at 8:45. That's cool if that works for you, but I don't really think that that works for me, and it's great that I can acknowledge that. And what else? Oh God, it feels like there's just so much. I think I'll just leave it at that. Thanks for letting me share.
The floor is now open for sharing. Please limit your sharing to the topic of this workshop. Each person will have up to 3 minutes to share. You may share from your seat or come to this microphone to share. Please speak as loudly as possible. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Donna. I'm a compulsive overeater. Oh, Lana, that was awesome. I've been in program for like 18 months or something, and I got a sponsor really fast, and I recommend that to everybody. I'm a lot like Alana. I'm not going to sit here and not do anything. I came here because I didn't want to be the way I was anymore, so I'm going to change. I came here to change, so that's what I want to do. But sponsorship scared the crap out of me. So when my sponsor said, "I think it might be time, Donna." No, it's not time. I'm not ready. So like I always do, I took it to God, and I surrendered it, and the fear went away. And not very long after that, somebody approached me. Somebody very, very different from me. Somebody who has bulimia and anorexia and across addictions. But when it comes down to it, addiction is addiction is addiction. And her and I are actually very similar. And from then, I've got a handful of sponsees that I talk to every day. And it's the best part of program. Service is the best part of program because through them, I learn about myself and I learn about recovery. And what a blessing. Oh, my God, what a blessing to have these wonderful, beautiful women call me and tell me about their lives. And I get to tell, you know, God gets to use me to help them. And that's why this program works, because we got to keep giving back. So one day I'm going to be telling one of my sponsees, it's time to sponsor. And then they'll have to give it to God, and it just goes round and round and round. So don't be afraid, because the gifts of sponsorship are amazing, amazing. Anyway, thanks for letting me share.
My name's Elizabeth. I'm a recovered compulsive eater. And I really love this chapter, Working with Others. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from eating compulsively as intensive work with other compulsive overeaters. I translate that. Practical experience shows that if you want to stay recovered, you need to work intensively with other compulsive eaters. There's a sense of urgency in that that doesn't come across in the negative. I need to work with other compulsive eaters. I have currently now three sponsees who are in 12, 10, 11, and 12, so I'm open for a newbie. They're starting to sponsor. I need to continue to sponsor. I need to continue to share the message, carry the message. And as far as expectations of sponsors, on page 94, I usually read this paragraph with my new sponsees. Outline the program of action, explaining how you made a self-appraisal, how you straightened out your past, why you are now endeavoring to be helpful. It is important for him to realize that your attempt to pass this on plays a vital part in my own recovery, and I usually translate it into, it's important for you to realize that this message that I am carrying on plays a vital part in my own recovery. Actually, you may be helping me more than I am going to be helping you as a sponsee. I make it plain that you are under no obligation to me, that I only hope that you will try to help other compulsive eaters when you escape your own difficulties. And I suggest it's important that that you learn to place the welfare of other people ahead of your own. And I make it clear to you that you're under no pressure. You needn't see me again if you don't want to. And I won't be offended if you want to call it off. For you have helped me more than I have helped you, because I've done the carrying of the message, and that's reinforcing my own recovery. So if my talk had been sane, quiet, and full of human understanding, I will perhaps have made a friend. Maybe I have disturbed you about the question of compulsive eating. This is all to the good. The more hopeless you feel, the better. You will be more likely to follow my suggestions. Pass.
Lana, compulsive reader. Just while you guys are getting ready to come on up, I'm just going to fill the air. That last share made me think about a story that I talk about all the time in meetings. I don't know where it's written. It might be written in As Bill Sees It, but it's a story about Bill talking to Lois, saying, this is not working. Like, these drunks will not stay sober. I'm trying to help them. I'm trying to carry the message, and it's just not working. She's like, no, it is. And he's like, no, it's not. He's like, nobody's staying sober. Like, they're all going back out. Like, I'm failing at this. She said, no, it is working. You're staying sober. And he's like, oh, right. So it's for, what that tells me is it's for my recovery. I give it away so I can keep what I have. Thanks.
Hi, my name is Amanda, and I'm a compulsive overeater. I've been in program only since June. I am not a sponsor. And I have a sponsor, but I think that it's really neat to hear how I got one. I came into my group. We're a small group. I only go to one group because that's just what I can do right now. And I feel like when I sit in that group that the five other people, usually the solid three, they are my sponsor. They are my three. I go to them. I feel like I can call any of them at any time and they will give me direction. I do have a specific sponsor that I do follow up with. However, I am an all or nothing personality. And on my very first meeting, I was a deer in headlights. And the first person that spoke to me said, take some time. Take whatever. I think she said 6 weeks, 3 weeks. Take 3 weeks before you commit to a sponsor and look around and see what you're doing. And it was like, oh, I really needed to hear that. I don't think every person who comes in needs to hear that. I needed to hear that. So for 3 weeks, I sat there and I was like, I'm going to come, I'm going to go, I'm going to sit there, I'm going to participate, that's what I'm going to do. And then 3 weeks came and I was like, I can't get a sponsor. I cannot go any farther. Like, this is all I can do. I'm totally terrified. I'm really overwhelmed. And I went home and I told my husband, I'm at this point and I need to do this and I don't know what to do. And so we talked about things for a while. And then we celebrated my little guy's birthday. And my sister comes up and my sister is radiant. She's one of those people that, like, everybody in the room, they look at her and you can't take your eyes off her because she's stunning. And so is my older sister. And then there's me. And so my sister is talking about how it's really nice to be on the other side of being, like, having kids, because now her kids are like 10 and she's gotten into fitness, which, you know, she was perfect before. And now she's into fitness and she's like, yeah, like, I'm really happy. I'm 115 pounds. And I looked at my husband and I didn't have to say a word. And we got home and he said, you're going to find a sponsor and you're going to get there. And I said, I am twice the size of my sister. I am twice the size. I am literally two of her in one person. How can I ever venture forward and say that to somebody else and expect them to help me to fix that? Because that is a huge, whole other person worth of issues and problems and things that I carry around every single day. And it is so debilitating. And every time I go out with my family, all I can think of is I am two times the size of my sister. I take up two of her chairs. I take up two of her whatever. And I have this sponsor. And, you know, she's really, really great. And she's really, really patient. And she's putting me through my paces because she's telling me, like, you know, you are an all or nothing. And let's do it one step at a time. But I'm really, really clever. And I'm arrogant about being clever, and I'm able to procrastinate because I'm good at being clever and being arrogant about it. And I have put this huge barrier in front of her that she cannot surmount. And then I experienced death and loss, and I've had 5 deaths since May. And it's from my great-great-grandma, super old, to, like, my friend who's 2 years older than me, who I take care of his daughter every week. So going through all of that, and then circling around with, like, I'm supposed to connect and open up to this person, I don't just feel like there's me and then there's, like, the second me that's the same size as my sister in me. I feel like I'm on my way to having 3 of us. So I'm going to be me, I'm going to be my middle sister, like, my one step, and then I'm going to be the 2 steps. I'm going to be 3 of us. That's how I feel I'm going to be if I don't figure out how to get past this barrier and connect with this sponsor who is really available to me. And then I came to this weekend and I thought, you know what? Maybe it's like there's no fault on my sponsor's part, and maybe I need to find a different sponsor who can be less kind and less gentle and who can wrangle me in and be like, I'm going to be there so that you're not the third person. I'll be your third person for now. And then I'll be your second person when you get down to the size that you know, your doctor feels is necessary or whatever. But I don't have to be 2 people for the rest of my life. And I'm 30. I've got a lot of years to not want to be 2 people. So for those who do sponsor, even if you're super kind and they're not phoning, it's not because they don't want to. Maybe it's because there's the barrier there that they just can't cross. And you can phone them and you can text them every morning. And sometimes it's not going to be a fit. And it's not because you're not lovely. And it's not because you're not reaching out all the ways that you can and all the ways that your sponsor thinks that she needs. Because your sponsor might not know that what she thinks she needs and what she actually needs, or he, is different. So I picked the right sponsor for the person who I think I am, and I think this whole journey is that I am not who I think I am, and I don't have to be 2 people. But that means that I have to realize that the one of those 2 people that I embody might not be the one I think I am. if that makes any sense. That's my philosophy degree. Okay, thank you so much.
Hi, I'm Lori, compulsive overeater from Parksville, BC.
Hi.
I just wanted to share my experience, strength, and hope around my very first sponsor. I had heard about OA from a coworker, and I didn't know a thing about 12-step meetings, and I was somewhere in my 40s, I guess. And I went to the meeting, and I knew I was home. The minute I went to my first meeting, I knew I belonged there. And I went to a couple of meetings, a small town, so there's only about 10 people around the table anyhow, and I wanted to be the know-it-all, but I wanted to take, I got the book, the 12 by 12, and I happened to be on a week's holidays, and I looked at the size of the book and said, I'll be cured by the end of the week. Hasn't happened yet, but I'm on my way to being a better person anyhow. And this lady approached me, actually, and said, would you like me to help you with this program? She didn't say, would you sponsor me, because that probably would have been more than I could handle. And we went through the OA workbook together, just the two of us. And we were, you know, both in careers, and we had busy lives. And we would arrange to get together one day a week. And she was the only face-to-face sponsor I've ever had. All the rest have been virtual. Like, FaceTime has become my greatest tool for talking to a sponsor. But this person led me through those 12 steps twice, and took that forth, that very first fifth step, which was amazing. And one of the best things she did for me is after I had given her my fifth, she said, will you hear mine? And I'm going, well, I'm not the right person. I don't know anything about this. But we did that because I think it was God-inspired. I had felt so worthless. And when I listened to her fifth, I didn't think any less of her. I thought more of her. So I have to assume that the same was true of our relationship. And it went on for quite a few years. And then, unfortunately, in those days, we didn't have FaceTime and all these cool technology things. And she moved to the mainland. And it's only 30 miles apart, but it's like, it might as well have been the other side of Canada for me. It just didn't work. And then after that, I got, you know, virtual sponsors, and it works. So if you're looking for a sponsor, look in the virtual rooms too. That does work, and I just wanted to put a plug in for that. Thank you.
I'm Christine. I'm a gratefully recovering bulimic and a compulsive overeater. And I just love this topic, and I was thinking about my very first meeting I went to in Toronto. And before I left, George and this other woman, her name eludes me, came running across the room and said, don't go. Here's our numbers. And they said, we'll be your temporary sponsors. And I thought, oh, that sounds good. And so that's probably the way I approach everybody who looks like a fresh face. Hi, would you like to get engaged? We don't have to get married. You know, like, but I'm a pretty good fiancé. And you know, we can phone each other. So over the course of time, I've had, like, co-sponsoring, where it's like this 50-50. And my first co-sponsoring was we had three people that we met in my office Friday at noon. And she was 300 pounds. And over the year or two, we went swimming together. Then we got a tricycle for her, and we went biking together. And it was only because of the two of us influencing each other. And from my end, she would cook hummus in a certain size of container and put 20 in her freezer at a time. You know, and it was just, we just had this really great balance, because she could never get any exercise, and not that I did, but someone else in need, you know, it just brings out the best in you. And the same thing for me. She was never putting things in containers and that, but since she was doing it for me, easy to do. And we did that for 2 or 3 years. She isn't in an OA anymore. And my very first person that ran across the room in Toronto, I tracked her down because she was an entertainment lawyer, so I knew she'd gone to Vancouver. When I tracked her down in Vancouver, she hadn't been in the program for 10 years, and yet she showed up and came with me to a meeting. I'm in a great sandwich myself, but that's probably not a good term to use here, but I'm between two sponsees that are just so different and so complementary, and it's just like family. It's like little sisters and big sisters all at the same time, and I find that under their influence, I pray differently. You know, I start having the things that come out of my, like my Alaska prayer person always says, maybe I'm the one that says, spread the most love in the best way. Yeah, I think that's my line that she uses. And she talks about the extravagant love, God's extravagant love. So then I hear that coming back to me. It's a great kind of prayerful, spiritual cross-pollination. And I just want to share a couple of things. Thanks.
My name's Rosanna, compulsive overeater, and I'm from the Oregon Intergroup, Portland, Oregon. I'm interested in this, how it all works, because I don't know, somehow I became a sponsor without studying on it. But I need some guidance about when the contact, I don't know when to bug them. So if afterwards, if you have, you know, I'll follow up so much, but I don't want to bug people because a lot of us don't like people telling us what to do. But yet, we do need structure, and that's why, you know, we've been doing everything we want to do when we want to do it and not before, and so we come into this program and they're suggesting that we follow a food plan and call somebody and write stuff and things like that. And so when somebody wants me to sponsor them, I like a real structured program. When I first came in, the thought of a real structured program gave me nightmares. I mean, literally at night during my sleep. And so there's a balance somewhere, and so I like to hear people talk to me about following up on people. When do you become a nag, and when do you become a help? Is there a balance somewhere? I'd really like to know it, because what I really like to do is tell people how it is, and I know how to do it, and if you do what I tell you to do, you'll be successful, but not everybody's the same way, and I need to learn how to approach some of that. So if anybody has any more hints, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for your participation. Please remember the anonymity clause. Take the stories, but leave the names behind. Keep coming back, abstinent or not. Please complete the evaluation form you were provided. Your comments help us develop workshops for future conventions. Would all who wish please join me in the serenity prayer for closing? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.